right, so today we're going to start this new language called JavaScript, which we discussed in broad detail last time. One thing I mentioned was that JavaScript has a lot of functions in it. So to illustrate that, I bought the manual for JavaScript. It's quite thick. Can't hear? Hello. Let's see if it works at all. Can you hear? You can hear that. Just run that through your signal processor, and that's it. Hello. All right. So, we're discussing JavaScript. Everybody should have a copy of the file set in that box over there, so you can follow most of it from there. The only things not on the file set are the examples. If you go to the web version of the file set, the examples for each file are clickable on each file, so you should be able to do that later. And the URL and the file set is pointed to in the home page of the class. So, as is traditional, you start off all lectures on computer languages, telling people how to write "Hello World." I guess that was made, at least for me, was made traditional from the first book on C. Told you how to write "Hello World," and so this particular file here tells you how to write "Hello World" in JavaScript, and also tells you what JavaScript looks like. So we notice that what we have here is almost a traditional HTML page. It has a header, which has a title, it has a body, and it has an end of a, it has actually an ordinary HTML tag here in bold, and then it has five unusual lines here, which are JavaScript. So, however, they're in the same spirit as HTML, namely HTML, everything is defined by a tag and ended by a backslash tag. So, For JavaScript, the tag is the tag script, and the ending thing is a backslash script. Can you still hear me? So we have a choice between grateful echo and hearing me. How about that? Can you hear me? Yes? Okay. All right, so the key differences are these five lines here, of which four are sort of standard. And they're actually described, I think, on the next foil. These four standard lines that tell the browser that this is JavaScript, and they also have some peculiar technology here, which is some mumbo-jumbo to allow browsers that do not understand JavaScript to be happy Because if you ingeniously look at this, you will notice that to an ordinary browser, this stuff here looks like a comment. Because it starts with angle bracket exclamation mark minus minus, which is makes it a comment. So this stuff here is actually not necessary on Netscape. Could shout. Hello. Can you hear? Marginally. Hello. Not coming through. More batteries, don't we? So, you know, there's a standard story of the empire being lost because of the lack of a nail for the horse's tooth. So now you have your knowledge of JavaScript has been lost for the lack of a viable 9-volt battery. Probably. So I'm going to just continue. And hope that you can hear me. Who knows? I mean, but then we would have to find something else when it doesn't work. But all right. Well, while we are waiting for this to be rescued. This is the only line of JavaScript on this page. And this particular line takes the JavaScript object called document, which is defined to be the current HTML page. It is dotted with a method for the object called document, which is write some information followed by a new line. And then the argument is the information. So all this does is write this particular information, which is hello world defined to be an H1 tag, out to the current document. So this stuff here is entirely equivalent to removing these two lines, removing the document.write, and just having hello world there. You found the battery? Because that battery is probably bad as well.
Isn't this thing?
There's got to be a plug. Right now, try. Hello? Okay, well, you. I think we have a new battery here. Let's just see. Is it much better? All right. All right. Can you now hear me? Well, at least you should be able to write hello world. You've been staring at it now for 10 minutes. for some reason I missed this page. All right. So, as I mentioned, there's only one real instruction, document.write, which has an argument called text string, and the general syntax of all JavaScript is these four magic lines which you just cut and paste from one document to another, and you stick whatever JavaScript you want in the middle. And the Java, so what the browser does is the browser's reading the HTML document. So when it sees an image tag, it downloads an image. When it sees a H1 tag, it makes it a large font which is bold. And when it sees a JavaScript tag, it takes the code and hands it to a computer program which interprets what's in that code, which it then executes those instructions. So it runs the computer program, let's try your other one. It's possible that this was a bad battery. Sure, this battery doesn't work at all.
No.
It's supposed to be new. And how can this? I think there's something defective with this device, because it's not even getting this right. It's meant to be on, isn't it, or not? Alright. Put it down. Turn the volume down a bit. Can you hear this? Right. Okay. So, so the syntax of JavaScript is very straightforward. I was describing what happened to the browser. So the browser is reading what you put there. And the rule is it just reads the lines of the JavaScript. It will do arithmetic. If it sees there are various commands that it can do which alter the document, such as writing HTML into the document, those are just interpreted by the browser as though they were downloaded from the server. So, there's meant to be some examples here. So this, can anybody see this? Not really, is that right? Well, this one, let's look at this one, which is more interesting. So when you come to this example, which is available on the home page, I'll just tell you what this is doing. Alright, so this is telling you the types of things you can do. If you could read it, it says this text is bold, which is a string. There's a document.writeln at the beginning, which I've just scrolled through, and then there is a method. This is an example of a string, an object of type string in JavaScript, and that has a method called bold, which is similar to the types of things you see in Java, which converts it to bold. There's a method called italics, a method called strike, and so on. There's a method called font color, which changes the color. And so this has the feature that you can then use these methods attached to strings to be able to change the style of the text, which appears over here, saying this text is bold, etc. You can do subscripts and superscripts and things like that. So that says that there are strings in this language which you can manipulate. Now, all these examples are seemingly trivial because they have text. They become non-trivial when we have variables which are set equal to those strings, because then we can manipulate those variables, concatenate them, and produce them, and then we can do these interesting things with them, like change their color, etc. So there are similar types of approaches to changing relative and absolute sizes, which are using the font size method. So this is an example you will find often on the web, which is setting the background color. So the way you set that, this is a little more less trivial in JavaScript. And this actually illustrates quite a few. Yeah, I think all we need is here. So what this says here, that this is an input tag, which is an HTML tag. The type is a button, so this is an ordinary thing you get in an ordinary form. And it has this command called onClick. So all these tags in HTML have attributes. So a typical attribute is a source, which is where you get, say, an image from, the URL for an image, or a width, which is the size of an image. Here we have a new tag, which is very useful, called onClick. And onClick is what you expect. It says, this is the attribute which tells you what to do when you click on the button. So here we have a button, this one. And what it says is, please call, the onClick attribute is assumed to be followed by a JavaScript command. And this JavaScript command just says set background. Then if we scroll up to this page, we will find a piece of code, if we can locate it, called function set background. And it's looking, so we first of all set a variable called isWhite to be true. Then in the function, which is, this is right at the beginning of the HTML. So as it's loading it, as it's loading this stuff, Netscape sees the script command, so it says this is JavaScript. It then reads this stuff here back to down to the end of the script, and you can see what, if you could see, you would notice what, this stuff here has no write commands. So this is just sticking this stuff into the Netscape browser for it to use later on. So it's defining inside the browser a variable called isWhite. And then when we do the onClick equals set background, onClick looks at this variable called isWhite. And then if isWhite is true, which says the current color is white, it says document.bgColor equals pink. And it set isWhite to be false. And then here we have an else command, which is execute if isWhite is false. And then we set document.bgColor equals white. So this is a very simple piece of computer program which has this, which basically toggles the variable isWhite and correspondingly changes the background color of the page here between white and pink. So this illustrates several things. It illustrates on-click. It illustrates that you can have here the value of not having just document.write, because here this is not being done at all with any document.write. It's being done by changing the actual objects defining the document. So if you read this thing here, probably a third of this manual is describing the endless objects that describe a document. If you think about forms, applets, links, images, etc., there are an awful lot of properties of those which are necessary to know to define what a document is. And so one of the properties of a document is the background color, which is called BG color, and so document.bg color is the background color of the current document. There's a slight subtlety here in that we have so-called two frames, and the JavaScript in this frame is affecting the JavaScript in that frame. We haven't actually formally described frames yet, but that's not terribly important because we can... This is the source of what's running in that frame. So this is just meant to illustrate what's controlling that frame. Now there's only one special feature of this example. In the BG color is one of the few HTML attributes that are executed immediately. Most attributes are not executed immediately. Then it loads the page. If you change a particular property of the HTML page, it will not show up because it gets stored away. And what you have to do to make it show up is to reload the page. There is actually a reload function in JavaScript which allows you to do that. It just happens that BG color has the feature that it instantaneously sampled. It just must be the way Netscape is built. But almost every other color, like every other thing, like font sizes and stuff, if you change the font size, which you can with a similar type of technology, to see that change in font size, you'd have to do, technically you'd have to execute something here called window.reload. The window defining this frame here has a function associated with it called reload, which is equivalent to pressing the reload button on the Netscape menu. So there's something in JavaScript that corresponds to every single attribute, every single button, and they're all here. You just have to, and there's no, a few people in web development companies know all this stuff by heart, but most people, I think, just look it up because it's sort of straightforward stuff, which is, you certainly don't need to learn. So this is a similar example from Stanford, and it has, instead of the, remember we had this, in that previous one we only allowed two colors for the background. Here, they've carefully made up a set of radio buttons allowing you to set any color. So when you click on the radio button for coral, up comes coral up there for the background of this particular frame. And there's dark gray and so on. And whatever your favorite color is. And so this type of page, which there's actually several examples of, are quite useful for getting previews. These are sort of design your page to make it look prettier. So you can, so here we were changing the background color. If we did this, we changed the text color. And we would notice that a pale green background followed by a papaya whip text color doesn't make it terribly visible. And so we would presumably change it to some other color which would be more visible. And then presumably if you go to VBA or IST or somehow, they would tell you about aesthetics, about whether green and red looks good, and you would then be able to find out what's good. Computer science, as far as I know, doesn't study aesthetics, so I do not know whether that's a good color coordination. Anyway, this anyway, so that's the type of thing you can do. So this particular example here is actually similar to the one we just did with that is white example. Namely, here we have a typical on click. So here you have an HTML page, because it starts with the HTML tag and ends with the backslash HTML tag. You have a JavaScript function called compute, and you have a form here which has some text and a button, and then that button has an onClick command which calls the function compute. Now, if you look at this JavaScript here, it actually has some quite interesting features. The most important is this thing here called form.result.value and form.expr.value. So what does that mean? So form is the argument of compute, which is the current form we're in. Result is the name of this text field here, called input type equals text, name equals result, and value is the value of that text field. So what this says is, take this form, go to the text field called result, set the value, and what do you set it equal to? Well, you set it equal to whatever you get by eval, which does it just does a JavaScript interpretation of whatever is its argument of. You just calculate whatever was in this form.expr.value, when expr is the name of the form up here where you're meant to enter some information. So this does sort of calculations. So if you look at the next page, so if you execute this page, this is the text field expr where I place 9 plus 5. Do it with the button which has the on click. And result is gotten by applying eval to 9 plus 5, which is, of course, 14. So this shows that JavaScript can do arithmetic, and that this arithmetic is client-side. There is one couple of features here I wanted to point out, which are rather common. The first feature here is that this function, if you look at it, appears in the header. You know, as I think I mentioned last time, HTML pages have a header and a body. Typically, the header is often, in fact, ignored because it's actually optional. The only thing you usually ever specify in a header is a title. But with JavaScript, it becomes very convenient to put sort of general purpose JavaScript, which are a bunch of functions that you want to call. You always put those in the header. The reason being is that the header, and it's not surprising, the header is processed first by the browser. And so if you want your function to be around and you don't, and it's not doing a write command, then much the best place to put it is in the header of your page, because you know that it's going to be read in. Otherwise, for instance, if you had this command here and you put the JavaScript at the end, then as Netscape is a sequential animal, it starts at the beginning of the document and goes to the end, there is a chance that if you were very fast in clicking and you put the compute function at the end, that it wouldn't have actually loaded the compute function, and therefore it will give you a JavaScript error when you press the button. So you will, as far as I know, you lose absolutely nothing by putting all interesting JavaScript capabilities in the header, and it has a lot of advantages. So you should assume that JavaScript, which uses document.writes, will go in the body, because that's where the document.writes are typically done, although you can, of course, you are allowed to write all this stuff here. You can generate the header from JavaScript, so you can have document.writes, which are not just in the body, but typically document.writes are in the body, and all interesting arithmetic is in the header. So, if we, alright. So here is an example which actually illustrates a couple of things. It illustrates the alert function which we actually use. There are two functions, built-in functions, which are commonly used, which are effectively printfs at some level. They're called alert and confirm. So this one is called alert. And alert issues a message and then continues. Confirm issues a message and stops until the user does something. Now they all have this miserable feature of saying Netscape error, even if there isn't an error, but that's just a Netscape, how Netscape likes to do it. So this is done by calling the system function called alert. And this one here is, so it has two functions called welcome and hint. They both call alert with different messages. Let's look at the one we saw called welcome. The alert function called welcome shows another typical feature of typical capability of JavaScript. The body tag is allowed to have an attribute called onload. So the body tag is the thing that defines the beginning of the HTML page. It has BG color is a typical thing you'll find in a background color or background image file is a typical thing you put in a body tag. But here in JavaScript, there's a new attribute you can put in a body tag called onload. You can also put on unload. And those are just JavaScript expressions to be evaluated in the case of onload when you load the page. So as soon as the page is loaded, it issues a message. Here the message is rather uninteresting. There's a later example where it's done on unload, and it issues a message to say, "Are you really certain you want to leave this page? Have you done everything you need to do?" All right. So here we have onload. We have the command onload equals welcome. If you look at welcome, which we diligently find. Function welcome just says alert, welcome to JavaScript tutorial, and that's what the message you get is. And of course, if we don't like that box, we just click OK, and then we obey the instruction to click me on this button. And so that if you look at the this particular page, you will find it has a form with a button which has click me on it, and it has the onClick attribute set to be hint, and hint says the alert method is handy for debugging and other things. So the all good computer programs, the only way to debug is print statements, and that's true in JavaScript, like all other decent computer programs like Fortran, stuff like that. So the way to debug JavaScript is you stick alert and confirm statements in it, and you get these messages, so you see what mistakes you made. You can also use them, and of course, like ordinary print statements, to do other things besides debugging. Alright, so here's the on-unload one. So here, we're meant to type an account name. So here's Fred. And then we press this button. And then it tells me that that particular button has an onClick command, which tells me to make a note of my account number. And then when I leave this page, I get an alert button which tells me to make a note. I get the same message. And it reminds me to bookmark the previous web page. So that's an example of an onUnload function which calls alert. So this is the so there are a bunch of important cases here. So this is the so we illustrate in the previous discussion the use of forms and the onClick command. Something like onClick, onLoad, and onUnload are called event handlers. Well, the thing that you call is called an event handler because loading or unloading is an event. Clicking is an event. So as we get to the end of these this foil set, we will discuss the slew of event handlers. And so there's event handlers. So that's, if you remember, Nancy described event handlers in the Java abstract windowing toolkit with the action method. So these are the action methods in JavaScript. And the events that you're getting are very similar to the events you had in Java. There's mouse over, focus, change. So they're natural event handlers for everything that you might expect to happen to a page. And as the user, as the page changes, or the user moves their mouse around, or the user enters text, they all can trigger event handlers. And just as in Java, you could write your own event handler, which then would calculate the price of pizza in one of Nancy's examples. You can in here do your own event handler to do whatever you want to in JavaScript. And the essential difference is the difference I explained last time. Here, everything is being done with ordinary HTML, with forms, the classic input, and there is no Java here at all. This is HTML. So this allows you to do a lot of the things you can do with sophisticated abstract windowing toolkit, but solely within the HTML domain. So that's why I called JavaScript, Java with the AWT changed by the Netscape browser. All right. So we'll show an example of this, but as here we have some examples of so-called parameterized HTML. So this essentially illustrates what I already said was the reason to do document.writeln. So we have two JavaScript invocations here. The one up here is put in the header because this is defining nifty variables that we're going to be using. So by my general rule of thumb, we put that stuff in the header. And so we're defining an image width to be 600 and an image file to be mpac.gif. And then in here, we're in the body, because here's the body stuff. And then we have defined some JavaScript. And this particular JavaScript is document.writeln. And the argument of document.writeln is a string. And this string is made up of three separate strings. The first string is a bunch of ASCII characters, which is the image tag, a line equals top. And then it says width equals. Then this quote ends the string. And then it says plus. As in Java, plus is what you use for adding strings together. Plus image width, which we look up here as 600. Plus, and then we start the string again. Source equals, I miscounted. There are five strings here. Source equals, close quote, image file, and then we have the end of the tag. So this, if you look at it, is exactly the same as writing an ordinary image tag, except the value of the width is a variable, and the value of the file is a variable. Now, in this particular trivial case, these variables are not changeable. but because I set them at the top of the file. But it's extremely easy, and some of the examples which we have attached to this page show cases where you can change by hand the image file or the image width, and not change by hand, you change with a form. So you can add a form to this page which allows you to input image width and image file. So you have a form with an onClick. That onClick calls a function. The function says image width equals form dot dot name dot value, which is whatever you entered, and that allows you to have a system where you can dynamically change, in this case here, the image file or the image width. So this is exemplifies something which, when you can make it sort of arbitrarily complex, is a very powerful way of generating dynamic pages. So this is a sort of example. The one we had already, is it not? Maybe we'll do this one. All right. But if you looked at the script here, this one is generating, again, this is generating dynamically with some document.writes. It's generating this image and this text, and you can change this particular example to change that text. So I think I'm going to... I don't think those are the best examples. Let's go on. It looks though the server's gone to sleep. Alright. So that was the end of the introduction to JavaScript, which was meant to illustrate the types of things you can do with JavaScript, which is arithmetic, especially on the basis of forms. And you can generate effectively arbitrarily complex dynamic HTML pages by building up from the values of variables and then using document.write to generate those pages. I only showed you a single line of document.write, but there is, in principle, you can, because you've got all the stuff of a computer program with for loops, you can generate arbitrarily long documents using JavaScript. And they can all be dynamic. So the advantage of JavaScript can be it can be dynamic. You can take very easily the results of forms and input them. So this is what and as I pointed out, these forms are very fast because it's all client-side. When you enter that stuff in a form, it goes straight to the client. The client processes it and changes the value. So it's essentially instantaneous. Whereas if we wrote a CGI script to do this, it would take a substantially longer time. Okay. The next few foils are a little more global. Netscape would like you to use the same technology, JavaScript, to build effectively server-side programs. And when you do that, it's called LiveWire. And so LiveWire is like JavaScript, except the objects it has are not for HTML pages, but the natural objects to build CGI programs. Now, I have never used LiveWire. I'm not certain if anybody ever has used LiveWire. And certainly, its use is negligible compared to the use of JavaScript, which is client-side. But so LiveWire is the same language with different objects, or if you like, different packages in a Java language, Java syntax, which you would use to effectively write CGI scripts. The trouble with it, as it says on that foil, is that as far as I know, only Netscape supports it. And whereas Netscape dominates the client market, it does not dominate the server market. We run dominantly Netscape clients, but our servers come from NCSA. And so it's much harder for Netscape to dominate the server market than the client market. And of course, the other point that is that if you look at the way the industry is going, they're not building their servers out of JavaScript attached to conventional servers. They're building their servers entirely in Java. So my intuition is that because Java is actually more powerful than JavaScript, and because it's fully industry supported, that's a far more plausible approach. The reason why JavaScript is still an incredibly viable client technology is that Netscape dominates the browser market, and therefore a technology which is highly optimized around their browser, it's very effective compared to LiveWire, because, I guess I should say very effective compared to Java, because to be able to do the same things that I can do so much trivially with JavaScript, I effectively have to build a browser out of Java. And now somebody has done that called Hot Java, but they don't have the hundreds of millions of dollars that's been put into the Netscape browser. And so the Hot Java browser is just not as effective as the Netscape browser. So I think there are good economic and functionality reasons why JavaScript on the client side is very effective, but LiveWire on the server side may not be so effective, and the Java is a more likely server technology. So this particular foil here is a very relaxing foil in that I don't think you need to worry about it too much. It just notes that that the script tag actually supports some arbitrary languages, and the only languages it supports at the moment are JavaScript 1.1 and JavaScript 1.0. Operationally, JavaScript 1.1 is what came with Netscape version 3, and JavaScript 1.0 is what came with Netscape 2.0. And if you really insisted, and you wish to support the people who insist on using Netscape 2.0, Netscape has some points out how you could write it in such a way as you could do JavaScript for 1.1 and JavaScript 1.0, and by using the language tag, make certain the browser chose the right version. I guess this only makes sense when I also note that JavaScript 1.1 has a bunch of capabilities which are not in JavaScript 1.0. So as far as this class is concerned, I'm going to assume JavaScript 1.1, because not only does it have more functionality, it's got a lot of bugs corrected. So I do not believe any rational person would ever want to use JavaScript 1.0, because it was incomplete and had subtle bugs which made it relatively difficult to use. And like most Netscape products, JavaScript 1.1 still has bugs, but not nearly as many as JavaScript 1.0. So I don't think this is terribly important. We use this particular file to illustrate yet another function. I mentioned the reload command. There's also a replace command. Replace command just takes the current page and replaces it with a particular URL. And like many of these methods and so-called properties in JavaScript, you have to actually think rather carefully where to put them. In this case here, it's attached to the so-called location object. It'd also be attached to the window object. Location is the object attached to a window that holds all the information about the location where that window came from, like the URL and other information like that. this actually is a glitch in this foil. It should say no script, the backslash no script. I'll change that. So that's foil 15. It has an error in it. So if you write no script, this is for browsers which do not support any JavaScript, and so they represent what browsers without JavaScript capability are meant to do. The last capability is a little more useful, at least in principle, though I haven't used it. You can build libraries of JavaScript, and the script tag can have a source attribute which effectively names a file, which file is meant to be full of wonderful JavaScript that you download. So in classic language, it's like an include command. Include a certain file, just reads that file and inserts it in the document. So that's what the source attribute inside script does. It says include this file here. It's a little subtle in that if you must have a script tag followed by a backslash script for each source, and you must not have interesting JavaScript within that script, because the script, if you have a source attribute for a script, the JavaScript code following the script is interpreted as what to do when you can't read the file, not what you do after reading the file, which is what you might have thought. So what you do is you have a script source equals for your libraries, and then you have script, an ordinary script tag without a source, and then you put all the wonderful JavaScript you happen to want for this particular application. All right. So, if you want the world's most uninteresting interpreter, then we won't do this one. I should have tested that. I thought it might not work. All right. Well, if you happen to type the URL correctly, and you take a web page, and you type in the location field JavaScript colon, it will invoke a JavaScript. See what my problem is. This wonderful script I have. Yes. You see, I have this marvelous script that when it saw JavaScript colon, it said, this is a relative URL. We will add the absolute address, because obviously Jeffrey left it off. And then it made JavaScript colon added into the current URL, which is total nonsense. So if you take JavaScript colon and type it into the location field, you will get this wonderful, interesting page here, which has two frames. And then if you type A equals 3, B equals 2, A plus B, you will get 5. So if you wish to generate... So this allows you to use JavaScript like BASIC as an interpreter. You type your commands at the bottom here, and whenever you type enter, it prints it out. So if I go A, it will give you 3, because that's what I inputted for A. So in general, you're meant to be able to do general arithmetic in this fashion. There are sort of funny, there are various colon commands like that in Netscape, which are a little not very well documented. All right, so that's what a JavaScript URL is. There is some sort of peculiar ways of using that, which are explained on this foil. The JavaScript colon says invoke the JavaScript interpreter. So then you can. So I showed how you could use that within a Netscape browser. It invokes the JavaScript interpreter, and we can do arithmetic or whatever we wanted to do. You can also use it, as explained here, to generate amusing URLs. So here. We have an ordinary link which says href JavaScript colon history.go argument minus one. So we have to understand a few things here. History is a property which is equivalent to the history button at the top, or the go button at the top of your Netscape browser. So that gives you the history. The argument of history is which direction, I mean to go, is how far you go up and down in the history array. So minus one is go back one entry. So history, and history of course has a method called go. History is an array, which is just a list of these URLs you visited. Go is a method of that history array, and the argument of go is how much to go back and forth within that array. So history.go minus one says go and fetch the URL, which was the last one. So we say JavaScript colon, which invokes the JavaScript interpreter, history.go minus one invokes, calculates history.go of minus one. So if we make that the href, the URL, and then you press go back one step, you will go back one step in your HTML page. If I wrote history.go of zero, I would actually reload the current page, because argument zero gives me what I have already. So, and you can do this in more interesting ways. It doesn't have to be just history.go. You can call a function, which as long as that function does something interesting, and you can, for instance, you could say JavaScript colon function open brackets, close brackets, semicolon, history.go of minus one, that will invoke the function and then do history.go of minus one. So you can have arbitrary JavaScript expressions with the statements separated by semicolons. So this is illustrated here with a... It's sort of interesting. I have full command over this viewer. When I walk within a few inches of it, it obeys me and it quivers in fear about what I'm going to do to it. So, all right. So maybe this is an SU feature, because they're afraid I'm going to touch it, so they have this built-in adaptive mechanism in it. All right. So here we have an image map, and. You could see if the other one does the same. So, all right, here we have an image map, and we will work on this one instead. And we'll let this poor neurotic screen over there recover. So, here we have an image map, and they happen to define the area tag, which is within an image client-side image map, and it says that the rectangular area, which is defined by the pixels whose corners are 0, 0, 16, and 14. So this defines a rectangular area on an image map, and typically this is done an ordinary image map. You have an href, which is the URL that you go to when you click on that part of an image map. So that's a traditional image map. So what we've done here is that we have... got JavaScript colon for the href. We called some magnificent JavaScript function called do something, which did some magnificent thing. Then we actually said top dot frames of one, so that we'll find out that should actually say top dot frames of one dot location equals, and then it was a particular URL that we wanted to load in the first frame of this particular page. So that shows that we can have an image map which invokes an arbitrary JavaScript function, and then it actually loaded something into a different frame. Because all that href does is it invokes, in this case, a JavaScript interpreter. So you can see you can build pretty flexible, powerful systems. All right, so here's something which I've never used, but is reasonably clear. And so this is an invention in JavaScript 1.1 or Netscape 3.0, and it's called a JavaScript entity. So JavaScript entities are a more convenient way of inserting JavaScript variables into HTML. So originally, I told you how you wrote JavaScript variables into an HTML. What you did was you document.writeln, string of one, plus a JavaScript variable, plus some other string, or something like that. You just made it up and stuck it in the document.write. Well, with a JavaScript entity, you can actually embed this variable in the HTML without the document.writeln. So the syntax is extremely peculiar. Like a typical, this is obviously some hacker, one probably a Syracuse graduate student who, employed by Netscape, late one night invented this syntax. So what the syntax for a JavaScript entity is the following. So it's illustrated for the case of the one I did already, where we're defining JavaScript variables for the width and the source of an image. So we have image width equals, so there's no document.write. This is an ordinary piece of HTML, and normally under width we'd have 600, is the example I had before. So what I write is ampersand, open curly bracket, JavaScript expression or variable, close curly bracket, semicolon. So ampersand, curly bracket, JavaScript, close curly bracket, semicolon is the syntax. And the justification of this syntax is that HTML already uses ampersand, semicolon as a way of doing funny characters, because the greater than, if you want to put a greater than sign in HTML, you have to write ampersand GT semicolon to get a greater than. So what they've done is they've obviously hacked the part of the HTML parser that interprets these special characters and inserted a call to the JavaScript interpreter in that parser, so when the thing inside the ampersand semicolon is curly brackets, it goes inside the curly brackets and hands it to the JavaScript interpreter, which calculates whatever's there and returns it to the HTML parser, and then everything proceeds. So it's sort of obvious what they did, but it's not. So this is a typical pragmatic interpreter. This is hard. Per Brink Hansen would hate this, because this is very inelegant obviously not designed from fundamental principles. It was somebody coming up with a pragmatic solution. People are bored writing document.writeln. Embedding, it was just one line. To get this same thing in the ordinary syntax, I'd have to have five lines. The script, the hiding command, the document.writeln, the end of the hiding command, the end of the script. So this is obviously more elegant and somewhat faster to generate. Now there is, when they hacked this, they had some restriction, which I don't think is entirely necessary, but this is what they did. Then you can only use this on the right-hand side of attributes values. So you can use it for width equals, or source equals, or href equals. You cannot use it just inside ordinary text. So you can't use it inside an h1 tag or something like that, because that's not on the right-hand side of an equals sign. So this can only be done for those equal signs. Whereas the other way of doing it with document.writeln, it can be used in any way, anywhere. You can generate, as I showed you with Hello World, you can certainly generate with document.writeln, you can generate arbitrary HTML stuff. So, if you look at this marvelous page here, it is meant to tell you that it has a couple of buttons called image 1 and image 2, and if you look at HTML of interest, it has actually both both things illustrated. So, although we haven't, I guess it's almost unreadable, but you will see that this has one image invoked with a document.writeln and another image, image 2, invoked with a JavaScript entity. And if you can remember the names of some nifty images, you found that one hard to read. If I click on that, it will change the background file that I just to this particular file, nhse.gif, and so on. So you can use this ability to change dynamically images or these JavaScript variables, which are then used within the document, whether you use the document.writeln or the JavaScript entity. In each of these cases, there's a reload command built into the JavaScript so that you actually see it. Otherwise, you would not see it. The only reason you saw this change in the background image is that there is a window.reload built into the JavaScript. Alright, so here's a couple of foils doing something just quickly comparing JavaScript with Java. So we've already gone over these points, so we'll go through them very quickly. JavaScript is interpreted and it is not compiled ever. There is no such thing as a just-in-time JavaScript compiler. Java, as we discussed, is compiled bytecodes downloaded from the server and either compiled with a just-in-time compiler or interpreted by the client. JavaScript has a syntax quite like Java, which is the object name dot method, but there's no such thing as a class in JavaScript. As we'll see, there's only one thing called a function. A function plays the role of class, method, and constructor in JavaScript, and they're just not distinguished. They are identical. So JavaScript is object-based in that you can define with a new command new instances of objects, and those objects are very natural objects. They're the same things you would use objects for in the Java AWT, like buttons and stuff like that, and each object has methods, etc., and they're also data hiding. Each object has its own values of the data which you can access, and the syntax is the same as Java. If an object has a property or a data associated with it called Fred, object name dot Fred gives you the value of Fred defined for that particular object name. JavaScript is not a true object-oriented language according to the normal definitions, and Java, on the other hand, is a proper object-oriented language. As we've seen, Java and JavaScript are used in rather different fashion. Java is downloaded as a world-defined entity called an applet, which creates a window, and that Java runs within that window, and everything in that window is Java. JavaScript is sort of mixed up in this funny fashion with the header and the body and these entities. It's all mixed up with the HTML. So that's why I said right at the last time, if we have text on this end and computer programs on that end, JavaScript is sort of an extension of text, and Java is an extension of computer languages to be able to build text or to be able to build web stuff. All right. But it's sort of interesting to compare how these two approaches, which are really rather different, allow you to do the same thing. So, as we've discussed, JavaScript has full access to the capabilities of the navigator, which is typically of course, Microsoft are the two most powerful browsers. Whereas with Java, you've got to rely on the Java AWT to do whatever you want. We haven't seen this, but JavaScript is probably the most sloppy language, or one of the sloppier language there is. There is only one type of variable called var. So floats, integers, what have you, and strings, they're all the same, they're just var. And JavaScript uses some ingenious heuristic to decide what you want. Typically it thinks you want text. That is default. And there are functions to convert the text. If you really want a floating point number, there is a function to insist that you get a floating point number or to insist you get an integer. And sometimes you can make mistakes in JavaScript. I made a mistake. Let's give an example. If you make a mistake, if you add 1 plus 1, if you say 1 plus 1, if those are numbers, you should get 2. But if those are strings, you should get 11. So you will find it quite easy, if you're not careful, to get 11. And the example I did that in was when I inputted things in a form. So when I inputted in a form, they became strings. When I defined the same thing with an equal sign to a number, they were numbers, because it remembered where they came from. And I had an error because I had some of my stuff, when I redefined it in a form, it was not properly converted back to a number. So you have to be careful in JavaScript. So this is the power, if you like, of loose typing. It's very convenient. You don't have to worry, because usually, 90% of the time, or maybe higher, JavaScript makes the correct assumption. The heuristic it has is very good. But it can make mistakes. Well, the user can be a little sloppy, and the sloppiness can lead to errors. In Java, the disadvantage is you have to explicitly define everything to have a particular type. You've got to use cast commands to be able to convert them from one type to another type. So Java is far more pedantic, but you do know exactly what you have. You have an integer, it's an integer. It won't suddenly become a string when you're not thinking. So it has some advantages. Java, the compiler, analyzes object references to see that they make sense. In JavaScript, all these errors occur at runtime because nothing's looked at until runtime. And JavaScript is quite hard to debug, partly because of that reason. And as you'll see in an example later on, both Java and JavaScript have similar security features. So neither can access client-side files. And there are various restrictions on URLs they can access. They cannot easily access the value of a URL unless it's from the server that the JavaScript came from. So so these are essentially the same, at least if you use a Netscape browser for Java and JavaScript. So there's some security restrictions which are not in the language, but they're in Netscape's implementation of the language. All right. So now we can't. So what we've done so far is we've given you lots of examples. We've given a few sort of filling in of details, and then the next stage is meant to be some more sort of formal definition of the language. And this particular page we've essentially already gone through. There is only one type called var. The syntax is var variable name equals whatever you want semicolon. That defines a new variable called whatever you choose to name it, and it gives it a value. There is, as with all languages, some sort of scoping rules. And if you define a variable, if that variable is inside a function, it is not known outside that function. But if you leave the var off and it was defined somewhere else, it assumes it's a global value. So if you have var fred equals 0 outside a function, and then inside the function you say fred equals, then that's going to be the global value of fred. So there's some rather reasonable scoping rules. I already mentioned you have to be very careful about the loose typing. We will define some system functions called parseInt and parseFloat. parseInt and parseFloat do what you expect. They take arguments of the strings and convert them to integers or floating point numbers, respectively. There is a useful magic value, which is now, which is with no quotes. So everything starts off as undefined or null. And you can set things to null if you want to undefine them. So you will find sometimes in JavaScript you test to see something is null, whether or not it's been defined. For instance, in one of my programs, I test to see whether the so-called window.opener, which is the window that called this particular frame, is equal to null or not. Because if it's equal to null, it means it wasn't called from somewhere. If it's non-null, it means it was called from somewhere, and that means you can actually go and access the JavaScript variables from where it was called. So properties are when not initialized are set to null. So there are these two types of quotes, single quotes and double quotes. I forgot to mention that that's very important because when you look at JavaScript, it's very confusing often to read because of the various quotes. Because you're often generating HTML, and HTML has quotes. So you will have noticed, if you could have read it, that when I had my image tag, I said width equals double quotes, single quotes. So what was that? So the double quotes was an HTML double quotes. The single quotes was a JavaScript single quotes. So what I used was the single quotes to enclose a string which happened to have a double quotes in it, and so when it got interpreted, the JavaScript thing of single quotes say this is a string delimited by single quotes. I will scan through to the next single quote, and then it will view double quote just as an ordinary character and hand it to HTML as a double quote. Of course, you can use backslashes and things like that to make it to get around this, but that's even harder to read. So because we have one language, if you like, embedded on another, we have JavaScript embedded on HTML, you often need to decide which language is going to use single quotes and which language is going to use double quotes, because both of them are allowed to use either. So you just want to be careful, because otherwise you'll get confused situation, which if you just type rather carelessly, you will find one person's HTML's quotes misinterpreted by JavaScript and its quotes and so on. There are Booleans, which are either true or false, and comments, I think, are identical to that in Java, or at least the simplest comments. Then you have slash slash, which is a comment until the end of the line, or slash star, anything you like, including new line, star slash, which is a general multi-line comment. So let's just see, we'll finish on this file, but let's just see if there's anything interesting in this example here. These are probably the world's simplest examples. So this uses the alert function to get 115, and of course it. And so this is just trivial. It says var n sum equals naught, var n cost equals 57, n sum equals 25 plus n cost plus 33, which presumably is 115, and then when we press the button, it presumably has an on click, which says, this shows that you don't have to have an on click to your own function. Here the on click is alert of n sum. So we just put an on click can be any JavaScript expression. If that JavaScript expression returns a value, it doesn't have to be something that's a function that's defined in the header. Here, n sum is defined in the header as a value. An alert of n sum just gives you an alert box with 115 in it. So, all right. So I'm going to guess I'll stop there, and we'll proceed with JavaScript next time. 9-volt batteries. You know, what are friends if I own 9-volt batteries back?
I can give a good clue.
What?
I can give a good clue.
Yes. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know.
Good. All right. So he gets an A in electrical engineering to be able to change his car.
You should push the